This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
I was thinking about this week how for, I think, like 10 years in a row when my kids were small, we went to on a vacation every year to Lincoln City, Oregon, and there we got a little beach house, and we were only there for 7 days. I mean, 1 week, but you can't believe the amount of stuff we had to pack for that trip. Now, at the time, I had an 8-passenger van, which, by the way, I still drive, and even though I know it's even less cool than a minivan. Okay, but we would take the back seat out of that van, and I'm not kidding you, absolutely cram it with all the stuff we would need for 7 days. I'm talking games, hobbies, tennis rackets, a week's worth of food, 5 suitcases. We had 8 kinds of potato chips and massive amounts of chocolate, and it was you know, beach chairs and umbrellas. We were like a traveling beach vacation outfitter. And, you know, I'm not a very good packer, and I don't like to pack, but my wife is beautiful, man. She has lists, and then she has lists of lists. And so here's the list for the kids, the list for Art, the list for me, the list, you know. And she would get us all packed, and it was wonderful. And, well, after all, man, when you go on a journey, that journey forces you to think ahead of time of what you will need. It's no good arriving at the beach and you don't have your tennis shoes, you don't have your electric shaver. You need it all. And you need the games, so you got to have it before you pack. Now, why am I talking about vacation packing and preparation? Because this weekend, we're going to examine what Jesus said. It's about a journey that all of us are going to take. And it's the journey that happens when he returns for a second time, and we all take the journey to eternity. In a way, life on the planet here is spent packing for eternity. That is, preparing for eternity. And today, Jesus is going to help us see how to live in light of his coming. Now remember, in Luke 12, man, already in Luke 12, what we've seen is that Jesus is asking us for a radical reorientation of our lives. He's been helping us see that his followers must learn how to reorder their priorities. And Christianity, then, is not just about comfort and stained glass and happy worship choruses, man. It requires something of us. And God has some expectations for us. So today we're going to look at just a passage of Scripture, and I pulled 5 short phrases from that passage to help us kind of get it and to know what God would be saying about how to get ready for Christ's return. That's the issue, how to get ready for his return. And the first passage that we're going to look at is verse 35, so if you read it with me, that'll be great. You have it in your outline there. It says this: stay dressed for action, and keep your lamps burning, and be like men who are waiting for their master to come home from the wedding feast, so that they may open the door to him at once when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will dress himself for service, and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. If he comes in the second watch, or in the third, and finds them awake, blessed are those servants. First thing that Jesus is really saying through this whole passage in general is this: prepare for his return. Be like men and women who are waiting for their master to come home. And so Jesus creates this metaphor in which his followers are depicted as servants waiting for their master, Jesus, to come home from a wedding feast, and it could be quite a long feast. He wants to give them a picture here of how important it is to be ready for his return, even though they have no clue as to when that return is going to be. That's the same point for us 2,000 years later. Come on, get ready, be prepared for his coming, even though you don't know when it's going to happen. Jesus wants his followers, if we're going to follow him, part of following him is preparing for eternity. the eternity that begins when Jesus Christ comes to planet Earth one more time. Now, sometimes people ask me, Art, do you think it's we're in the end times? There's only one answer to that question. Of course we're in the end times. How do I know? 1 Peter 4, the end of all things is at hand. There it is, okay? So we are in the end times, but you've got to know what it's meant by the end times. Yes, it's true that some crazy guy is predicting when the end time is going to happen. You know, he predicted May 21st, 2011. It's coming to an end. I told people, no, that's not going to be it, okay? Then he said, oops, made a little mistake, a little mathematical error, and therefore it's not going to be in October. No, it's not going to be in October, friends. How do I know? Well, Jesus tells us how we're going to know. Look at Matthew 24. Here's a little clue. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, okay? Not the Son, only the Father. Here's the clue. We don't know when the Master is coming. That's really the whole issue in this image that he's given. It's the story. No. You don't know, and Christians will not know. People are always trying to figure out when the end times are going to happen instead of living like this is the end times. John Orport, he amused me. I've read this before. He's once said that if you want to draw a crowd in church, you can speak about three things. One, first of all, speak about sex. You're going to draw a crowd. Number two, if you want to draw a crowd, speak about the end times. And if you really want to draw a crowd, speak about will there be sex in the end times, okay? So, guys, you know, people have crafts, they have charts, they have all kinds of stuff, but people get all crazy ideas. But people are so interested in when he's coming back, but Jesus is interested in how you live while you wait for him to come back. That's his emphasis. We don't know when he will return, but when he does, man, we know we want to be prepared, and we know that we are in the end times. We know it's the end times because Jesus has already come the first time. That's really the definition of the end times. It's the in-between times, in between his first coming and his second coming. That's the end times. And it's kind of like this. The image might be of a president who is inaugurated. Well, when he's inaugurated, now he's in his term. You know that that term will have an end, but the beginning was inaugurated, and now you're in between those two things. Well, same thing in the end times. The end times were inaugurated when Jesus Christ came the first time, and now we're in the time in between. Ever since he came, Christians, we believers are living in between times, between his first coming and between his second coming. And Jesus understands that. He reminds us in Luke 12 here that he's coming at a time you will not expect. It's a certain event, but it comes at an uncertain time. And what Jesus says, keep packing for eternity. Keep packing. Be ready. I want you prepared because you don't know when it's going to happen. Now that brings us to a second phrase that I think it's important. We must also anticipate his return. This is a little more specific. In general, be prepared. But he says, anticipate his return. What we're dealing with here in the context of Luke 12 is in the teaching of Jesus. Here, master, you've got masters, you've got servants. This image, he's talking about living between times. But what he's saying about, what we're going to learn in general is that Jesus wants to be faithful with our time, talent, and treasure, as those living in the light of his imminent return, as if it could happen any moment. So basically he's saying, stop looking for the Antichrist and start anticipating my return. Anticipate is just to look ahead. Just to look ahead and go, wow, that's about to happen, and how can I be prepared for what is going to happen? And Jesus uses two images here to get at this word anticipate, or to illustrate anticipation. The first one is stay dressed for action. Did you notice that in verse 35? He says, stay dressed for action. Well, guys, in this passage, this literal Greek phrase is a phrase that some of you are probably familiar with because you have a King James Bible. Literally, this Greek phrase reads, let your loins stay girded. Now, that's probably a phrase that would kind of creep people out if you start using it with other people, so I don't recommend that. But why is it used here? And it's used here is that because some of you know that in ancient world, it was typical for a man in that culture to wear a long robe. And when that man was at leisure, that robe would stay that way. But he would tie it in place to get it out, you know, out from around his legs when he was in warfare or he was busy or was in action or travel. So dressed for action is a very good translation. That's what the phrase would mean. But also know that in the Greek language, there's a tense in the verb that means this is a continuous action. In other words, it's not something you do back and forth here. No. Come on. Get dressed for action and stay that way. So that's the reason that this translation, again, is very accurate. Stay dressed for action. Do it, but then go, okay, well, now I can relax. None of that. Get ready to go. Be in a constant state, really, of anticipation. Now, there's a second image here that's interesting that, again, helps us speak about anticipation. It says, keep your lamps lit. So a lighted lamp, of course, would emphasize the need to be on constant watch, even though you don't know when the person is coming. I don't know about you, but I cannot go to sleep when there's a light on in the room. I need to have the light off, then I can go to sleep. Well, by definition then, if the light is on, you are going to be more alert, more awake. It's like expecting your wife or husband to come home after a business trip. You decide, okay, it's going to be 11:30 or 12, they're going to get here, but I'm going to stay up, you're going to keep the lights on, you're going to be looking forward to, you're going to be anticipating your spouse's return. It's kind of like Motel 6. We'll keep the light on for you. Well, that's what we're doing with Jesus. We'll keep the light on for you. That's exactly what's happening. We're up and ready for you, Jesus. So again, what it's all about really is anticipating, looking forward to his return. Now, just to add emphasis and illustrate how important this all is, Jesus goes on to say, I think, another thing. He says, be alert for his return. Now, you read that in verse 39. Let me read it to you. But know this, that if the master of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have left his house to be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. Now, you might be asking, so, Art, are you telling me Jesus is going to come steal my stuff? Because Jesus is a thief, right? And so, what does this mean? No. You got to understand, yes, in this story, that would be true. But what does that mean? I want you to see that what he's referring to here, when he says he's going to come like a thief, he's referring to the surprising suddenness of his return. It's very similar to what he said in Revelation 16 when he said, behold, I am coming like a thief. Blessed is the one who stays awake. In other words, come on, it's going to be sudden. And by the way, God cannot steal your stuff because he already owns all your stuff, okay? Just in case you didn't know that. Jesus is pointing out to you, he's pointing out to me, that I have to stay alert because I do not know when he will come. Alert means that it doesn't mean that you're going to go to all the end time seminars, you're going to study Ezekiel and Isaiah and Revelation all the time. He doesn't mean stay alert he doesn't mean by that, figure out when I'm coming back. Because guys, it says right here that you will not know. So you can't figure it out exactly. Instead, what he's talking about being alert, he's saying the whole emphasis is on how to live while you wait. The alertness has to do not with finding out a certain fact about when he will come back. It's about anticipating his return, being prepared for his return, and not winding up like you're in your bathrobe back here going, oh, really? I'm shaving. I didn't even know you were coming today, Jesus. No! What we're talking about is something being prepared. And he uses the image of the thief here because it's a natural image to say that. You know, if you know somebody's going to break into your house, if I knew somebody was going to break into my house, so I got wind of it somehow, I would bring my friend Doug Kitts, who's a police officer, and I'd say, Doug, come with me to my house. At 3:15 today, I'm going to have a little visitor here. He's going to try to steal my television. Doug goes, fine, we're ready. If I didn't know, if somebody just told you, somebody told me they're going to break in your house sometime, then I'd have to be alert all the time. That's his only point here. His only point is, come on, be thinking about it, be knowing that I could return at any time. Now notice that Jesus hasn't told us what it means to actually be prepared, what it means to be alert, what it means to anticipate. So far, he hasn't said, this is what you should do. He just tells us, be prepared. Now, we're going to talk about that in the next section. You're going to know exactly what it means to be prepared, to anticipate, to be alert. But before we get there, I want to show you something pretty amazing in verses 36, 37 and 38, because Jesus says, man, if you will stay alert, if you will stay awake, if you will be prepared for my coming, then you can expect to be blessed at his return. That's the next section. That's the next phrase. You can expect to be blessed at his return. Look at verse 38 in your outline there. If he comes in the second watch or in the third and finds him awake, blessed are those servants. Now, awake means, again, just another way of saying ready, another way of saying alert. So if you're awake, what's going to happen? There's going to be a blessing for you. So Christ followers, we're to be like servants who don't know exactly when the master's coming, but we know he's coming. He's going to come home from that wedding party soon, and we're going to be ready. But whenever he comes, we're going to meet him at the door. We're going to be ready to open that door. And man, we are going to be packed for eternity. And what does Jesus say? You're going to get a blessing. We're going to leave between times, between the first coming and the second coming. We're going to be faithful servants. And God says, well, okay, if you'll do that, you'll be prepared. You will get a blessing from me. Now look at the unbelievable twist here in verse 37. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will dress himself for service. Can you visualize this? Jesus, he's coming back. And now in this image that he gives us, he's now dressing himself for service. You know, today he'd put on a little towel on his arm. You know, he'd dress up. And then he'd say, well, come on right on in here to the dining room table because I'm going to serve you. This is an unbelievable twist. I will dress himself. He will dress himself for service and have them recline at table. So, guys, this may refer to the end times messianic banquet, often called in Revelation 19, the wedding supper of the Lamb. But even if it doesn't refer to that, man, the image is clear. When our master Jesus comes and he finds the house well cared for and his servants ready for him, he is going to turn around and serve his servants. In other words, there's going to be a rich blessing in our life. In fact, the word blessing or blessed is used here. It's the Greek word makarios, and it just means supremely blessed. It means, by implication, it means fortunate, well off, happy. You just can keep adding the synonyms there. But what we're really talking about is reward. Guys, you are aware, are you not, that even in this very chapter, in verse 34, Jesus talks about a treasure in the heavens that will not fail. In other words, Christians accumulate heavenly treasure as we serve God, as we're faithful to God. Now, we don't serve God for that reason, do we? We serve Him because we love Him, and He loves us. But our gracious God has said quite clearly, there is a reward. Now, it says there the master could come in the second or third watch. Now, in that day, the Greek way of thinking about the night had three watches. The first watch was 6 to 10 p.m., the second watch was 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., and the third watch was 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. So guys, the master, he's saying, I could come at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, you don't know. You could have to pull an all-nighter here, man, because I could come at any time, and you've got to stay awake that whole time. You know, when I read this, I thought of babysitting. I thought, do you know, when my wife used to do babysitting when she was a teenager, you know, the homeowner would say, you know what, we could come home, and who knows, it could be 11, 1 o'clock, we're not sure. And so the babysitter is going, okay, it's 11 o'clock, okay, I got to stay awake. I don't want him to come in here and see me sleep on the couch. I want him to come in and think, She's just checked on the children. She's in total control of what's happening in the home. Oh, look, the kitchen is all clean. Oh, the living room is all straightened. Some of you are going, where do I find that babysitter? But there are babysitters like that. And so when the parent comes home, they're going, wow, you've been alert this whole time. You've worked. You're not asleep on the couch. This is great. Here's a tip, you know. Well, when a Christ follower who's anticipating, who's alert to the coming of Christ, man, we're like that person who's ready to go. And we're serving God. And when God comes, he says, I'm going to serve you. I'm going to bless you. Now, as we read this passage, we do realize we have a little bit of a problem. Here's the little bit of a problem. We're told to be ready here, but we don't really know what that means. We're told, in essence, we're told to pack for a trip, but we don't know what to pack. Does that make sense? I mean, it's like you're told to be ready for eternity. You're told to be alert for his return, but he doesn't really tell us what to do. How can I be alert? What does this actually mean? Well, apparently Peter had some questions because in verse 41, he asks a question. Peter said, Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all? Now, I think it's interesting. Peter, you know, if I were Peter, I would have said, Jesus, what does it mean to have your light lit? You know, what does it mean to be dressed for action? I don't get that. I know you're speaking in an image, Jesus, and I'm trying to get the image, but I'm not getting it. Instead, he asks, Jesus, who is this for? Is this for us apostles, 12 apostles, or is it for all believers? I just think it's so interesting that Jesus answers the question we want answered. He doesn't answer who, and by implication that means it's everybody. Instead, he says, well, here's what you should do. And here it comes in verse 42. Let's read it. And the Lord said, who then is the faithful and wise manager? You can also, some translations will say steward, and a steward, of course, is a manager. Could be either one. Whom his master will set over his household to give them their portion of food at the proper time. Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that servant says to himself, my master's delayed, begins to beat the male and female servants to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him in an hour he does not know. Now remember, this is a parable, a little mini parable. It's you can't, every detail doesn't mean, you know, this doesn't mean that, your Christians are going to get drunk or something. You know, it's an image here. It's a symbol. But here's how Jesus tells us in this parable how to prepare for eternity. You know what he says? Do not put off faithfulness. That's the issue. That's the fill-in, Bob. Do not put off faithfulness. And when I say don't put off faithfulness, I'm talking about the fact there's something in all of us that want to do our own thing now and God things later. There's something in all of us where we say, no, I think my master is delayed here, and since he's delayed, I'm going to do my own thing. And often, let's face it, guys, I think if I ask you to raise your hand, has there been a period in your life where you said, my master is delayed, and I'm going to do my own thing? I bet you many, many of you would raise your hand and go, yep, I did that. I just said, no, I'm not going to live for God. So all I'm saying here is sometimes we want to postpone faithfulness, and we say it like this. Well, you know, I'm a student. I don't have much time or money. I can't really give anything to God. Or I'm a newly married, and we don't have time to be in service or in mission. Or I'm starting a new job. Or hey, we're going on vacation this summer, and all the money that might have gone to this God's work, man, that has to go to my vacation. We just postpone faithfulness. And the point that Jesus is bringing up here is that when you live in the light of his soon return, you do not postpone faithfulness. Now, guys, what I'm saying here is you got to pack for eternity. And if you're living prepared, if you're anticipating, man, you're reveling in his presence, then you are going to be faithful. We got a picture here of a few things in verse 42 and 43. It's talking about being faithful and wise, a faithful and wise manager. Now remember, a manager does not own the stuff. All through Scripture, you already know this, but all through Scripture, Christians are called managers or stewards because none of the stuff we have belongs to us. It all belongs to God. So the master is the owner. We're the steward. We're the manager of God's stuff. And our job is to manage it and to manage it faithfully. And what happens? We get blessed because of it. Now, friends, obviously, faithfulness in managing our time, talent, and treasure in general is committed all the way through Scripture. You want to know, how can I be a good steward or a good manager? Just simply this. Manage well, according to God's values, your time, your talent, and your treasure. And if you'll do that, all that stuff belongs to God, even though you think it sometimes it belongs to you. And if you'll do that in general, you will then faithfully be managing what God asks you to manage. And by the way, look what it says in this passage. That is the way that you stay awake. That's the way that you light your lamp. That's the way that you stay dressed for action. You are faithful in managing the things that God gives you. Now, friends, that's really the take-home truth today. The way to prepare for Christ's return then is to faithfully manage our time, talent, and treasure now. If you remember nothing else from the passage today, that's it. You're gonna prepare for His return one day? Just be faithful to what He's given you today. But as you examine this passage, guys, you also see that it appears to me in studying this passage that Jesus is pretty specific about the kind of faithfulness. Now, we know that if you look at all of Scripture, it would be faithfulness in general means time, talent, treasure, and faithfully managing that for God. But look at the details of this particular little mini story. Notice the details. The master sets his servant over his household. The servant is asked to give the members of that household, the master's household, their portion of food at the proper time. And instead of managing God's household very well, the servant has a potential of abusing his fellow servants and not giving them what's needed. So guys, while this passage in general is talking about faithfulness and stewardship, it looks to me that it might also be talking specifically about ministering to God's household, the church. That could be the emphasis here. Jesus' point is that all of us have a call to serve others in the body of Christ. That when you're a part of a community, a Christian community, man, you have a responsibility to that community. So your time, your talent, your treasure being used to build God's household. Really, the emphasis is really, I think, service in God's household. Using your talents to serve in ministry. Using your treasure to support the work of God. Using your time as a part of what touching people's lives. Now, some of you are new Christians, and I don't want you to misunderstand. New Christians, get this. Sometimes a new Christian will hear this and go, oh, this means that I have to quit my job. I have to say no to everything else except doing God's thing. There's no time to eat, drink. There's no time to watch a movie. There's no time to do anything else. It's all about just one. No. Listen, remember last week I told you, here's how you put God at the center of your life. Your life is like a circle, and God is to be the center or the hub of your life. And so, therefore, He orders your priorities according to what's needed at any specific time. Do it this way. God, priority number one. Two, my family. Three, work. Four, other pursuits. Now, get rid of the list, okay? Because that messes you up sometimes. Just think this way. God at the hub. And when God's at the hub, He orders the priorities of my life in the way that they need to be ordered at any particular time. So some of you are going, oh man, my priorities right now, I'm a young mom, and a lot of my priorities have to do with ministering to my kids. After all, they're part of the church too. They're part of what God would want to see ministered to. And so could, if you had God at the center, could you say, oh man, that's a big part of my ministry right now? Yeah, you can. So God has to be at the center. That's how you will know how to be faithful, because he'll order your priorities at a particular time. If you're retired, man, God's got a whole new set of priorities for you. And believe me, if your time, your treasure, your talents are not continuing to be used, you think, well, no, I'm retired from God. No, there is no retirement from God. Man, keep God at the center, and when you're, whether you're 30 or 70 or whatever you are, God will order your priorities, and he will help you to be faithful. Being a good steward means don't put off faithfulness. Don't do it when you're 18. Don't do it when you're 88. Because God wants you to manage your time, talent, treasure for him. And if he's the center man, he'll tell you how to do that every single time. I'm just engaged with God, using my time, talent, and treasure. And by the way, there is an emphasis here, I think, in working with the church. Sometimes in church, we have people saying, well, hey, I'm just thinking about how poorly they're serving me right now. They're not really getting to my needs. Hey, how about this? How about instead say, okay, God, where do I roll up my sleeves and get busy using my time, talent, treasure for your body, for your community here? How do we do that? Instead of, well, I'm going to evaluate you and you may be wanting and therefore I'll go somewhere else or I'll do something else or whatever it will be. No, no, no. Come on. Be faithful to what God has called you to. Now, guys, there's one last part of Jesus' parable that I have to go over. Or if I don't go over it, you'll say I skipped the hard part. This is tough, but there is a meaning to it, so let's read it. Verse 45, here's what happens to the unfaithful servant. But if that servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, begins to beat the male and female servants, to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. And that servant who knew his master's will, but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required. And from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand much. Now, my friends, this is not my favorite set of verses. I do not have this framed and on the wall of the entrance to my house. I did not memorize this with my kids when they were small. You know, verse 35, okay, the master will cut him in pieces, okay, and put him with the unfaithful. I did not memorize that, okay. Let's just admit this is a hard passage, right? But there's a principle of interpretation. When you learn how to interpret the Bible, there's a principle of interpretation. It's called a hermeneutical principle, but you don't have to remember that word. There's a hermeneutical principle that when something is unclear in the Bible, it's a little murky, then what you want to do, you have to interpret it in light of what is clear. And if you look at a parallel passage, in this case Matthew 24, you see a similar passage, but a different phrase is used. And the phrase that's used in Matthew 24 is, instead of he will cut him up and assign him, put him with the unfaithful, it is assign him a place with the hypocrites. So when Jesus says put him with the unfaithful, he's not saying, oh, we had a believer here. He didn't do very well. We're going to take him. He's not saved anymore. We're going to take him from being saved. We're going to put him over here in the place where the unsaved people are. And we're going to change his status. He's not saying that. Apparently what he's saying is this. That when he talks about these servants, some of the servants were not true servants. That is, they didn't really know him. They were hypocrites. That is, on the outside, they looked like they were believers, but on the inside, they weren't. Now, again, it's a difficult passage, but that's my best reading of it. Now, as the rest of this passage, you're going, oh, what about these beatings, Art? Well, it's talking about proportional, being proportionally rewarded, that faithfulness is proportionally rewarded. You're faithful, to the degree that you're faithful, that's the degree to which you get a reward. And also there seems to be, but in these beatings, there also appears to be this whole issue of discipline. That's the reason the guy who says, yeah, I know what to do, man. I know what Jesus is requiring. I know that he wants me to radically reorient my life, but I don't care what he says. No, no, no. It's not going to happen. I'm too busy with my own thing. That person gets severe discipline. The other person going, just kind of out of it, yeah, I don't really know what to do, and he's not doing it. He gets less discipline, okay, because he should have found out what to do. So the issue here isn't, there seems to be, you know, we want to, find out exactly what this means, but I think it's just pointing to the discipline of God, that God is interested in what we're doing, and that we should not postpone the things that God tells us to do. But also he's saying, hey, faithfulness is proportionally rewarded. You're given much, you do well with it, you get a big reward. You're giving a little, you're given less, you do well with it, you get a less reward. It's proportional to what you're given. And it's also proportional to how faithful you have acted with what you've been given. Guys, every single one of us has been given time, talent, treasure. Every one of us. And God is saying here, well, how are you going to use it? Don't put off faithfulness. Now, I've used this image throughout the whole issue, throughout this whole message of just packing for eternity. We're preparing. All of us here, we live between the first coming and the second coming. We live in between times. And so what we want to do is be faithful to use our time, talent, treasure in a way that will honor him. So that's what it means to be dressed for action. That's what it means to have your lamp lit. That's what it means to be awake. To be faithful what God has given. Now my encouragement, this is what I did this week and what I continue to do. My encouragement to you today is to just wrestle with this and evaluate your life. It's always good. See, the emphasis of this passage is really about God's blessing on faithfulness. Now at the end we see this, oh no, what's going to happen? But that's God's discipline. But you know what? The emphasis is really on God's blessing for faithfulness. He says, look, if you're awake when I knock on the door, I'm going to come in and say, hey, will you come? Hey, you get dressed up for supper, man. You sit at the dining table. I'm going to serve you. I have a blessing for you. The emphasis is really on God's blessing here. But still, it's a serious, serious message from God saying, are you going to postpone faithfulness a day longer? Are you going to just postpone what I'm telling you to do? Or are you going to just keep saying, my time, my treasure, my talent, it's all about me? Are you going to continue to say, I don't want to touch God's community? I don't really care about God's community, his household. So I think that it really is good for us to examine our lives. The way to prepare for Christ's return then is to use our time, talent, and treasure faithfully for him now. Boy, when we do that, we're packing for eternity. And when we do that, there's a reward. And for that reason, we can thank God. Let's thank him right now. Father, these words are so challenging. And yet, I just pray your people be encouraged by them. Your people would understand them. Your people would even right now evaluate what's going on. Lord, help us to remember that we're living for something bigger. Help us remember, Lord, that you care about what we do. Help us to remember, Lord, that you want us to manage our time, talent, and treasure in a way that honors you.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.